Supposed to be summertime, and general managers of National Hockey League teams should be taking the summer off, but of course they don't. Here's our friend Doug Armstrong of the St. Louis Blues. Mr. Armstrong, well, how is your summer going? We're doing great. You?
Very good, thank you. Sorry to interrupt you there.
Not at all. I did the same to you. There's many places we can start, but the Tarasenko signing was really intriguing. This is obviously a priority for you. This guy had a breakout year. He looks like a real star, and you lock him up for virtually all of his premium years. Tough contract to do, easy for you. Tell us about it.
Well, it's an interesting one because we've sort of lived in the bridge world here in St. Louis. We stepped out a little bit on Alex Petrangelo, but when we saw what Tarasenko could do last year, really the last two seasons, but last year, the way he scored goals, plus 27 player, the number of 5-on-5 goals. We told him when we were negotiating that we were going to treat him like a star. We were going to try and pay him like a star, but we wanted the term that star players give. And it was a give and take, but we're really excited to have him through 31 years of age, getting him right through the prime of his career. It's a big day for the Blues, and now the pressure falls back on the player to perform to the contract, but we think he has the character to do that.
Do you feel like you need, when you sign a star player like this, almost no matter what organization you are, now you say, okay, I got this guy for 8 years. I want to maximize, we don't know what his potential is, but it looks like it could be off the charts. Do you feel like you have to do something else in order to support him? Make another acquisition?
Yeah, I think we tried that when we brought Letera over, his center iceman from the KHL, and we were able to sign him to a 3-year extension just on July 1st. So it takes him out 4 years. So it's a centerman he's had great success with. You know, I think Paul Stastny is going to be a much better player his second year than his first year here. So I think that there's players here that can complement what he does well, and I also think we have good puck-moving defensemen that make a forward's job easier. So we're always looking to improve, but when you're paying that amount of money, you say, you know what, for that amount of money, you have to make other players better. We can't find guys that make you better.
Well, that's a good point too, yeah.
Doug, at the end of the playoffs, when you guys sat down and did your full organizational evaluation and began to kind of assess where to go from here, what were some of the findings that you're willing to share with us in terms of, okay, this is working, this is not? You know, obviously we see Oshie in Washington now, but what was the final kind of analysis from that of, this is what we need to do to finally take the next step?
Well, I think one of the things that crystallized itself for me that we had sort of deemed ourselves as a two-tier core group. We had an older tier of core players, Backes, Steen, Oshie, Bouwmeester, that have been here for a while or have experience. And then we had the Shattenkirk, Petrangelo, Tarasenko, Schwartz. And even if we didn't make change, there was going to be a difference in responsibilities given to those players.
Yeah.
So that was going to come regardless if we made change. We obviously had made a change allowing Blues stalwart Barrett Jackman to hit free agency and then trading TJ Oshie. So we're bringing in two new defensemen that will be in our group of six. We brought in a different style of player in Brodziak to give us a little more size, and then Brower to give us more size. I think we're going to rely on Schwartz and Tarasenko to a higher degree. With that being said, Backes and Steen have to be very good players for us with Stastny for us to have success. So we're trying to meld two generations into one, but we're also asking that younger generation no longer to sit in the back seat, but to jump up and grab the wheel.
So how do they do that?
Well, it starts with giving them the opportunity that playing them in the last minutes of games, playing them up by a goal when your natural instinct is to go to a veteran player. It's getting
right.
Those guys in different situations.
So that's a full organizational philosophy then.
Yes, it has to start with, it starts with obviously the coach and the manager and the players on the same page. And one of the things that we have to try and sell the whole group is that maybe less from you is more from the team. And when the team has success, everybody gets paid. I think when you look at Chicago, you look at the teams that win LA, even when players leave, they're leaving making more money than they were when they were there because they're thought of as winners. And I think that's what we have to try and become and sell that to our team, that by you giving up a little bit personally, you're going to gain a lot. The team is going to gain a lot, and ultimately, you're going to gain a lot on the pay scale.
Yeah, it's a real interesting philosophy. Mm.
With Doug Armstrong, the general manager of the St. Louis Blues, I don't really know how to phrase this question to you, Dougie, but there are organizations in all sport that appear to have the pieces to be able to compete for a championship. And for whatever reason, they play very well during the course of the regular season, and then for some reason, stub their toe. And we all know that 30-team league, 29 are going to lose at some point. And maybe you can argue whether you lose in the Stanley Cup final or lose in the first round of the playoffs. Maybe it doesn't matter that much. But I'm wondering how difficult it is to assess your team based upon regular season performance versus playoff performance. Go ahead, please answer.
No, I was going to say, I think it's the way you lose in the playoffs, too, you have to look at. Like, we lost to Chicago 2 years ago. We entered the playoffs with a number of injuries. And what disappointed me at that and that series was, I don't know what would have had them in the tank to move past them, but we had them down 2-0, and we didn't have the experience and the knowledge how to beat a good team when you're not at your best. I'm not sure we would have had enough in the tank to play past that team, but that was really disappointing that we couldn't find a way to manufacture wins up 2-0. Much different in the Minnesota series where, you know, I think Scotty Bowman was, I heard it from Scotty Bowman at least, that, you know, the odd number games are the most important in the series, 1, 3, 5, and 7, and we lost 1, 3, and 5. That's not a recipe for success. And so I didn't think we competed to the level necessary right out of the gate. And that was concerning, and it made us, as we like to say, we had to peel the onion back a few layers more than we were willing to in the past.
So are you suggesting then that the regular season performance may have effectively been more of a mirage than we thought? Like, maybe this team wasn't quite ready to be a championship team?
Well, I think that I have to deal in reality that we lost this year and we didn't play well. So I think in a regular season, when you're coached as well as Ken Hitchcock coaches, you can go in on a Tuesday night into Long Island or a Thursday into Washington, and because the game plan and the structure is so sound, you're going to find a way to get points. But when a team has the opportunity to peel back and look at your group and has 2 or 3 games into it, okay, let's try this, let's try that different. I think teams adjusted to us better than we're adjusting to them, and that's something that we've talked about, and we haven't been able to manufacture timely goals. A lot is put on playoffs on the goaltending, but if you keep pushing games along deep into the third period and overtime and you never score a goal, the goaltender is going to break at some point. So Tarasenko was a guy that I think that's why we're paying him an 8-year contract for $60 million. He's shown he can score at that time of year, and now we need players like the Backuses, like the Steens, like the Schwartzes coming, and some of these other players to help out and Tarasenko to keep doing what he's doing.
Doug, that point you made about, you know, the Tuesdays and Thursdays and the dog days of the season on Long Island or wherever, and just finding a way to manufacture some points, that's looking a little into your soul. When did you realize that? Did you realize that in the playoffs, kind of where, what the difference was, or was it really in the off season after a full evaluation?
Well, I got to say, when we entered these playoffs, I thought we were healthy. We were playing well. I thought we had a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And then when it came to such a
abrupt halt,
it took a long time. It was painful. It takes a few weeks. And the hardest one for me is that press conference 3 or 4 days later, because it's just raw emotion at that point.
Sure.
You say things that you feel at the time, but you look back on and I didn't give it the proper reflection. But obviously we were extremely disappointed and we had to look deeper into it. And I take a lot of pride in working in an organization that can have 6 months of great work. But the 2 weeks after, it totally nullifies what you've done. And that's one of the things I like about maybe the European football or soccer is that they put a lot of pride in the regular season championship as they do in their playoff championships. But that's not the world we live in here in North America.
It isn't.
So you can be the LA Kings and finish seventh and finish eighth and win cups and thought of as a great team, or you can be the Blues with the best record in hockey over the last 4 years and losing the first round, and people quite honestly think you're bums. So I think, you know, in our society, I guess you championships are what we're judged on, and that's what we have to try and win.
The Ottawa Senators of the early 2000s agree with you, Doug.
Yeah, among them. Before we let you go, you mentioned Kenny, and we like Kenny very much around here. I know I do. And I have a great respect for him as a coach, and I think you do too. Is it accurate that he only got a one-year contract extension?
He's actually been working on one-year deals for, this will be the third time, and it's more of a, you know, he's at the point now where he wants to work because he wants to work, and he just wants to work a year at a time. And when the season ended, he needed some time to reflect, and quite honestly, so did myself and the organization. And my belief is the easiest part is to call the coach and say, we're making a change. The hardest part is, and this is what you have to ensure, is you're bringing in somebody better. And when I did my soul searching and I looked around, and I wasn't going to make a coaching change because that's what people around me wanted, if I wasn't sure I could bring a better coach in. And ultimately, you know, Ken, I think, is going to go to the Hall of Fame. I certainly don't have a vote in it, but I would push for it when the time is up. But I think he's a heck of a coach, and I don't think coaching is an issue here in St. Louis. But I did have to, you know, he had to do his soul searching, and I had to do mine just to come up with that same conclusion.
Fair enough. It's a reasonable explanation. Because you would understand that there would be those who would have looked at that and said, well, that's really not an endorsement. You know, a one-year contract is sort of a, well, we'll give you one more shot at it. It almost has a negative connotation to it, more than a positive connotation. But I think you explained it well, sort of the Walter Alston syndrome, you know, 25 one-year contracts.
The thought of a player, well, he's on a one-year, the coach is on a one-year, the manager's on a one-year, so I'm going to have a bad year. Like, it just doesn't ring true, because their careers are on a finite level. And I think everyone just plays now because they play for the team, but if they play for themselves, they know that their next contract's, no one's going to say, well, your coach on a one-year deal and you only had 8 goals, so I'll pay you anyways.
Yeah.
So everybody's independent contractors, quite honestly, in this business at some level.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why this whole lame duck coach thing, I just don't buy into it, the economics of pro sports today.
Oh, no, but I think you would understand that there would be many people, and there were many people.
No, the perception, sure.
Perception,
I'm just saying,
is
the reality of
in
a room.
Sure, I understand. So are you done now? Do you think you've done about as much as you want to do?
Yeah, in our industry, I've learned never say never, but...
I understand that, yeah.
Right now, when I look at the depth that we have, we're still going to try and improve the depth of our organization on two-way contracts. I won't be making any active calls looking to recruit more players on one-ways. Now, a team might find out they didn't get the player they want and give me a call about a trade, and I'm always open to that. But I would say that there's a great opportunity or likelihood that this will be the group of players that come to training camp.
Well, so you can enjoy your summertime, and we hope you do. Relax.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
It sounds like you need a bit of a vacation, Doug.
Well, yeah. It's that kind of business, high stress. Thanks, Doug, and all the best in the summertime. We'll talk to you again, not too soon, but down the road. We appreciate it greatly.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me on, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Doug Armstrong, the general manager of the St. Louis Blues, and a really good guy and very forthright and honest.
Very revealing.